So welcome everyone to the third of our six Zoom sessions on mind and its potential. I hope everyone is doing well and staying healthy. Let's see, we're going to begin with our prayers and some meditation. So Linda, if you can bring the prayers up, we'll look at the Okay, last week we talked about refuge and bodhicitta. And tonight I just want to say a few words about the four immeasurables. And that refers to the four immeasurable wishes. Immeasurable, that they're incomparably, indescribably great and inclusive. That's the most important thing. These are things that we wish for, that we aspire to. We're using these to make this impression on our mind. We're not praying to an all-powerful God, but we are working with our mind and trying to make virtuous or happy-causing impressions on our mind stream. So these are four wishes that we can think about. The first is, may all sentient beings, and that's all, that means all beings who feel happiness and suffering. So if there's different humans, animals, and then creatures in the other realms that we touched on briefly last week, and that will be discussed more in the modules on death and dying and on karma. So may all sentient beings, not just the ones I like or my friends or my family, but the ones I dislike, the ones I didn't vote for in the most recent elections, and all the countless beings that I've never even met, both in this realm, all the human beings, all the animals, and all the creatures in the other realms, may they have happiness and the causes of happiness. Okay? And that's really the Buddhist definition of love, the wish that others be happy. Okay? So in the Buddhist teachings, nothing just happens randomly. People just don't become happy. They have to have created the causes for happiness. So that's the karmic causes. So not saying just may they have happiness, but may they have the happiness, the causes for happiness. The second immeasurable wish is, may all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. So may they not suffer, and may they completely eliminate all the causes of suffering from their mental continuum, all the negative karma that ripens the suffering. And that's the Buddhist definition of compassion, the wish that others be free of suffering. So love is the wish that others be happy. Compassion is the wish that others be free from suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. Okay, so that's just emphasizing what we've said in the two previous immeasurables. And may all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends or hatred for enemies. And by equanimity, we're referring to that state of feeling equally connected to all sentient beings. Okay, it doesn't mean that we are detaching or that we're equally indifferent or equally don't care about others. People think this means we have to give up our friendships, and it's not saying that. Attachment is that quality that overestimates the good qualities of others, and that's a major cause of suffering. But in a state of equanimity where we see, where we feel equally connected to everyone, and we see that everyone has an equal potential to become a Buddha themselves. Every sentient being has that potential, and it's present in everyone. So we kind of level the playing field, and that's a first step in the development of bodhicitta that, again, will be taught in the one of the following modules. So these are the four immeasurable wishes. So we typically begin with refuge and bodhicitta three times. We discussed that last week. The four immeasurables, and then we'll do the mangala offering, and we'll talk about that next week. So if you can scroll back to refuge and bodhicitta, Linda. Thank you. I will read that three times. It's best to keep yourself on mute because it gets very out of sync, but please read it along with me. And we typically put our hands together at the level of our heart. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends or hatred for enemies. Now we'll do the mandala offering, and I'll talk about this next week. This ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun, and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratna Mandalakam Niryatayami. Okay, so now we've said our prayers, set our aspirations. It's as if we've tilled the soil before we cast the seed upon it. We've softened our mind a little bit. It's not so frazzled and hectic as it's been at the end of the day typically. And we can begin our meditation. Begin by establishing your posture. We've talked about this at length. Your back is straight. Head on your shoulders straight, not tilted to one side or the other, maybe a couple degrees in front of the vertical. Eyes lightly closed or slightly open. Mouth lightly closed, not clenched. Tongue on the hard palate above your upper teeth. Shoulders down and back a little bit so your chest is open. Upper arms away from your torso. Right hand on left with thumbs touching. If you're sitting in a chair, your feet are flat on the floor. You're not slumped back in the chair, but sitting a little bit forward. If you're sitting on a cushion, you're towards the front of the cushion again, so that your pelvis is open and your legs are in a position that you find comfortable and non-distracting. So take a minute, scan your body from your head down to your toes. Identify any sources of tension or discomfort. Address those now so they don't become a distraction over and over during the meditation. And now we take three deep breaths from the abdomen, with the stomach expanding on the in-breath and contracting on the out-breath. And now we allow our breath to return to its normal pattern. And again, we think about our motivation. We always establish our motivation at the beginning of the session. And we know that the most powerful motivation is what's referred to as the bodhicitta motivation, the wish to become enlightened for the benefit of others. So we think that I am doing this meditation and participating in the class this evening so that I can develop my mind in ways that I can use to benefit others. And that may seem a little artificial or forced, but that's okay. Just start to put that imprint on your mind stream. Just very gradually begin the habit of thinking that way. And having established our motivation, we now begin the meditation. We're going to do a very simple meditation on the breath. The consciousness or awareness is on the physical sensation of breath moving in and out through the openings of our nostrils. Nothing more, nothing less than that. Mind on the breath. Mind aware of the breath. We could say mind reflecting the breath in the way that a mirror reflects what is in front of it. And whenever we become aware that our mind has wandered off to another object, which it inevitably will, we just gently come back to the breath over and over again. So we're going to do that for about 9 minutes. I'll just let you manage the meditation from here on out by yourself. Now we can finish our meditation with a brief dedication. We can acknowledge that we've done something a little bit out of the ordinary. We've made time to sit quietly and look at our mind and begin to develop a little bit of ability to concentrate. Just watching our breath and concentrating, that alone will not lead us to enlightenment, but it's a necessary skill along the way, which is why we need to practice it now. So we can acknowledge that we've done something that makes a positive imprint on our mind stream. And may we think that, may that positive imprint not be lost, but may it ripen in the future in a way that benefits all sentient beings. You may relax your concentration. Okay. Nice little meditation there, 10 minutes. I hope everybody is developing a little bit of familiarity with that practice. That's just one of many, but it's an extremely useful one. We are continuing our discussion of the mind and its potential. And this is the first module in the Discovering Buddhism series because Buddhism is all about the mind. It's been referred to a mind science. And from the point of view of the Buddha, the mind is where all the action is. All our happiness occurs in our mind. All our suffering occurs in our mind. Okay, these are mental experiences. They may be attracted to various physical sensations, but the actual experiences of happiness and suffering are completely mental, okay, occur completely within our mind, within the non-physical aspect of our being. And as His Holiness, the Dalai Lama always says at the beginning of his teachings, we're all alike in that we all want to be happy, okay? And that is not a selfish wish. It's not something that we should be ashamed of. It's a very valid wish. We all want to be happy. Unfortunately, sometimes we go about it in ways that could be considered selfish or harmful to others. But the deep fundamental aspiration to happiness is common to all of us and is completely valid. And it's not something we have to be ashamed of or hide. It's actually something to explore and think about, what does happiness really mean and what are the ways that I can achieve happiness? And so that really means understanding what our mind is and how we create the causes for happiness, as we touched on in the Four Immeasurables tonight. Just to go back and touch on a few points that I haven't mentioned so far. The Tibetan word for mind, I'm just going to give you this because you may hear it. It comes up if you listen to the prayers in Tibetan a lot, is sem, S-E-M. Okay, that's a very, Tibetan words you can recognize. They're very short, curt syllables. They're kind of like blocks. The Tibetan word for mind is sem. The Sanskrit word, in which many of the prayers are written in Sanskrit, the texts are in Sanskrit, is citta, C-H-I-T-T-A or C-I-T-T-A. So when we talk about bodhicitta, the wish to become enlightened for the benefit of others, this incredible quality of mind that we can develop, that is not enlightenment, but is very close to enlightenment on the path, bodhicitta means bodhi mind, and bodhi means great or large or massive. So bodhicitta is the great mind, the mind that wishes to become enlightened for the benefit of others. So those are just two terms that have been translated as mind. Of course, what we mean by mind when we use the English word is can be quite confusing. I was reading one article where the author said, the Buddhist concept of mind is, first of all, it's not a thing. And we talk about it as kind of this place or this box or something when we're in the West. We say, oh, I've lost my mind. Well, according to the Buddha, you can't lose your mind. Your mind is without beginning, without end. You can't lose your mind. Or we say, oh, he has a great mind. He has a really good, high quality mind. And again, if our mind is clear, and then that's common to all of us, that's kind of a false statement according to the Buddhist point of view. Or I'll keep that in mind, like it's this little filing cabinet we have over here. And the Buddhist point of view, as we talked about, mind is not a thing. It's not physical in any sort of way. It's not a place we can go to. It's not a filing cabinet somewhere in the back of our brain. And this author said, referred to the mind as an event, which I thought was an interesting way of referring to it, an ever-changing event. Or the mind is activity, ever-changing activity. If we think about our mind as an event or activity rather than a thing or a place, that gets us a little bit closer to what the Buddha was talking about when he said you needed to learn to train your mind. And then there is an actual definition of what the mind is in Buddhism, and it's very short. It's only three words in Tibetan. The Tibetan words are, the first one is TSAM, Sam. The second one is Gyals, G-S-A-L. And the third one is Rig, R-I-G. Sam means mere, M-E-R-E, in the sense of only or no more than. Gyal means clarity, which we talked about some last week. And Rig, R-I-G, means awareness. So the short Buddhist definition of what our mind is, mere clarity and awareness. The mind is mere clarity and awareness. And we talked about the clarity some last week. Clarity is the mirror, M-I-R, not mirror. I'm using two words that may sound alike. Mirror, M-I-R-R-O-R, or empty space, nature of the mind, or perfect clear light. Okay, the clarity of the mind without any fixed qualities. Okay, and awareness is what the mind does. Clarity is its nature. Awareness is its activity. So what do we mean by awareness? And this, I'm just going to touch on this tonight, and this will really be the content of the class next week. Sometimes in English translations of Buddhist texts, you'll see awareness as described as engaging. Engaging with objects through the senses. Okay? Another way, another more technical definition of awareness, it is an activity, it's the activity of the mind. It's referred to as the cognitive taking on of an object. And I like that definition because it implies that the mind and the object that it engages with through one of the senses, it takes on that object. It's mentally taking on the object. So when through my eye, I see 10. My physical sense organ, the eye, perceives 10. That's a straightforward perception. Now, it can be, and it doesn't mean because I perceive it, it's true or accurate. You know, I could say, oh, it's perceiving a white snake standing on its tail. That would be a perception of the eye, but it would not necessarily be a completely accurate one. But according to the more technical definition, it's the mind is engaging with what the eye perceives, or the mind is taking on the pen. Okay, so one way we can say it is through the sense organ of the eye. And this is at a level where it's not even labeled pen. It's just long, skinny, white object. My mind engages with that, or my mind cognitively takes on that, so that there is a unity and identity for that fraction of a moment of mind and object. So that's what we mean by awareness, okay? So we have the mind that is clear, and through the sense perceptions, it takes on or engages with objects or with phenomena. Clarity and awareness. And to that we add the word mirror. Our mind is only that. It is nothing more than that. It is nothing more than clarity and awareness. There is nothing else that we can find that is the mind. There is no more to it than that. There's no Robbie in there somewhere, some fixed Robbie. There is no permanent soul or ultimate nature. There is no Robbie that this mind belongs to or who owns the mind, okay? There is our body, the physical aspect of our being, and our mind, which is mere clarity and awareness. According to the Buddhist point of view, if we sit under our Bodhi tree and look carefully and follow everything to its logical conception, that's all we can find when we look there. The body and the mind being merely clarity and awareness. Nothing more permanent, nothing more unchanging, nothing more always existent than that. Okay? There's no me there. There's no self. There's no Robbie that's having these awarenesses. There's no Robbie that this mind belongs to. It's just a non-stop stream of mental activity. Let's see what my notes say. Okay. So that gets into, we'll talk about this more in the module on mind and mental factors. I'm bringing up a lot of things that we're just touching on here that will come up in more detail in further modules. This is just to establish the baseline for them. And we'll also talk about these things in the module on emptiness.
That's actually, Robbie Will did comment that this is touching on the early understanding of emptiness and the aggregates, et cetera. So.
Yes. Yeah, this is a way of explaining who we are. The Buddha offered many different explanations. This one is we're just mind and body. That's all we are. If you look, you can't find anything else. Another way of saying who we are is the concept of the five aggregates, which really just elaborates on that. Another is looking at the subject of mind and mental factors. They're all different descriptions of who we are, and they don't contradict each other or disprove each other some are just more detailed than others for where you are in your studies. And since we're right at the beginning, we're starting with the simplest one. We're just a mind and a body. And as they say, nobody's home, okay? Mind and body, but nobody else is there, okay? That's all we can find if we sit and look, okay? So talking a little bit more about awareness. Awareness is the activity of the mind as it interacts or engages with objects. And that engagement occurs through the six senses. And I was correct, according to the Buddha, in saying there are six senses. Okay, there's the five that we refer to in the West. There's the eye sense, the nose or olfactory sense, the taste or gustatory sense, the auditory sense, the tactile sense, touch sense, and then there's the mental sense, okay? The mental sense is the sense that perceives, interacts, engages with memories, emotions, ideas, facts, plans, dreams, okay? Those are objects that are perceived through the mental sense. In the same way that the pen casts an imprint on the physical organ of the eye, on the back of the eye, on the retina, and there is a sense, what's referred to, and I'm a little reluctant to use this terminology because it's cute, confusing, what's referred to as a sense consciousness, okay, that perceives white, long, skinny, white shape, okay? When I use consciousness there, it's not the same consciousness that I use sometimes to interact with mind. This is a very limited momentary consciousness that when this presents itself to the retina, the sense consciousness perceives that as long, skinny, white object, and the mind or awareness engages with that. Okay? Same thing when we have a smell. It goes into the nose, acts on the organs in the nose. The nose consciousness says, smell, just very non-specific smell, the sense consciousness, and then the mind engages with that. Ear, gustatory, tactile, and then the mental sense engages with any kind of mental object, okay? Like a feeling of love. The mental sense engages with that or perceives that, and the mind engages with that. So we have a nonstop series of infinitely small series of interactions with objects through the senses that the mind engages with. And they said, the Buddha said, you can't have two thoughts at the same time. You may be going back very quickly between two thoughts at any one time, but your mind is only engaging with one thought at a time, but there are multiple moments of thought in just a second. So we have these objects that we interact with one after another, perceived through the senses, the mind engages with them. When the sense perceives them, they're very, we could say almost neutral, okay? Skinny white object. But very quickly, so quickly there's different schools that say it happens simultaneously. Some say other schools say it happens right afterwards. Skinny white object, we start telling the story about it. Oh, that's a ballpoint pen. I don't like the color of that. It's probably out of ink. It really pisses me off. That irks me. Why can't she ever put a working pen out here? Now I have to throw this one away and go to the drawer, blah, 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 blah. Okay? just from perception of this, all that follows on it. Why does that follow on it? Why does all that happen? That's the result of karma, okay? Our habitual way of thinking. All that story that we put onto skinny white object comes from our karma, comes from our past actions. In fact, we can say the fact that I'm perceiving skinny white object at all is also the result of past karma, okay? The fact that I'm perceiving skinny white object and not perceiving loud deafening sound at this moment is a result of my karma. It's not random. Okay, so that's my karma. My mind engages with the object and more karmic seeds start to ripen immediately. And it becomes all this story that sure doesn't exist in this skinny white object. All of that is coming from my mind and the karmic seeds in it that are ripening. Okay, so initial perception followed by all this karma that's projected on something as simple as this. And then when it involves relationships and other people, you know, the karmic load gets even greater. And this is where, according to the Buddha, and you don't have to accept this, you just think about this, all our suffering, all our happiness come from the mind. Okay, and basically what it is projecting onto the objects that it encounters. Okay, this is all the result of karma, from the first initial perception to everything that we projected on it. Okay, so that's the awareness. Okay, which doesn't mean, as I said, doesn't mean the awareness is always accurate. In fact, most of the times it's not accurate. You know, we're projecting things onto objects and people that are not true, according to the Buddha. But that is the way right now in our current state of confusion and ignorance that we're engaging with objects in a way that is primarily not accurate. So according to the Buddha, what you need to do is train your mind to perceive things more accurately. That's developing wisdom, seeing things as they truly are, not as you project onto them. So let's see if there are any questions there, okay? Mind, mere clarity and awareness. Any questions or comments at this point
before
we do our second meditation?
I'm not seeing any questions on YouTube or on Zoom at this moment.
Okay.
But if you do have any questions, you guys feel free to put them in the chat box and we'll get to them.
Okay, let's do another meditation and maybe we'll have a few comments after that. Okay, so establish your meditation posture. Three deep breaths from the abdomen. Now just a couple minutes of mind, or set your motivation, generate the great mind motivation, the bodhicitta motivation. And now take a couple minutes of just paying attention to the breath, nothing more than that, to develop a little bit of concentration, get your mind a little bit more focused. now keeping our mind in this concentrated, focused, aware state, we're going to do a little bit of analytic meditation, which means thinking in a very concentrated way about a chosen object. I would just like people to work with the definition of mind that we've talked about. Mere clarity and awareness. Mere clarity and awareness. And think about each of those three words in turn. What does that mean in relation to my mind and describing my mind? Can I find anything else there than what the Buddha says is there? Clarity, awareness, nothing more than that. And you don't have to agree with it, just work with that mentally. Each of those words, what does that mean? Do I agree or disagree? Every time your mind wanders off to another subject, just set that aside and come back to the chosen object, mere clarity and awareness. Thank you. You can do a brief dedication to end this meditation. Okay. So that's all the material I wanted to cover this evening. I wanted to begin the discussion on how the mind functions, and we'll talk about this more next week. But the basic issue is, how does this non-physical phenomena of mind interact with the physical world around it? That's one of the questions, which is interesting. And how does it interact with the mental sense? So we'll talk about that more next week. And let's see, do we have any comments or questions?
We do. Joy wrote in, so clarity would be the ideal state of my mind, correct? But my mind is maybe irritated with someone or impatient. So then the clarity is muddied.
Well, again, this is where analogies work, or are helpful for some people. One that's frequently given is water that you throw a handful of sand into. Okay, it appears quite cloudy and muddy. But the water has not changed in its essential nature. And if you let it sit, the mud, the sand will settle out and the mind will be in its original state of clarity. Okay, but even when the sand was floating around in the water, the water aspect itself was still clear. So our mind is all, the nature of the mind is always clarity, okay? It doesn't, what you're referring to, the irritation and things such as that are these various awarenesses, these continual moments of awareness that are occurring within that clarity. So when we're angry, what is really happening is that we are aware of anger. But the clear nature of the mind is not contaminated or impure. The clear nature of the mind remains even though it is aware of anger. That doesn't change the clear nature of the mind. The problem is we see the anger and identify with that, and we're completely oblivious to the clear nature of the mind, the clarity of it. That's just totally obscured, like the water that's full of floating sand. We can't see the clarity of the water, though it is actually there. So this is where some of these meditations we do on the death process, where the anger and the irritation are dropped, the sand is allowed to settle out, are about getting in touch with the clear nature of the mind. Okay? So, yeah. So it's the continual way your mind exists. It's not the ideal. It's not something to aspire to. It's just to become more aware of it.
That's a great explanation, Robbie.
Okay.
It was very clear. Lori had a question about the homework, and it had to do with the meditation. You had asked folks to meditate on one of the three aspects of the mind. And she says, I'm stuck on no beginning and no end. Logically, it makes sense, but during my meditation, it seems I must take it on faith. I don't remember being born or the moment before that.
Yeah, okay. And that's where a lot of Buddhism starts. We start with an intellectual analysis that does seem somewhat artificial at times. And we just start to think about it. And then it moves to a non-intellectual level. So that's perfectly okay. I wouldn't force yourself to accept something that you can't say that is true for me. Okay. Just begin thinking about it. And that's you're doing exactly the right thing there in that type meditation.
All right. And also Lisa asked, you said that mind is activity. Could we describe mind as a process, taking on an object, but not attaching to it, not engaging with it?
Well, I think we use the word taking on and engaging the same, but I think process is a very good word for it. We take on objects, we engage with them, but we don't become those really. or those are not permanently the way our mind is. They're just temporary phenomena occurring within the clarity of the mind. Boom, you know, just little sparks. But that's good. A process, I think, is an excellent word for it also, in addition to activity. Yeah.
And then Daya asks, emotions would be explained as mental experiences in the mind, so love would be one of those experiences. How do we acquire, feel, express loving kindness, one of the core practices of Buddhism?
Yeah, very good. I mean, these are all mental experiences, love, compassion, and we all are familiar with them, and we all have some, and most of us would like to have more, and we wonder, how can we? And that's in future modules in Discovering Buddhism. But it's, as we go, it says in the Four Immeasurables, you have to create the causes. And the Buddha gave us specific ways to create the causes to become more loving, more more compassionate, more loving kindness. I mean, those are qualities that the Buddha taught us how to develop. But the first thing he said, first stop creating more bad stuff, okay? You have to learn that. That's probably, for most people, that's probably the first step is stop creating more hate. Stop creating more anger. Those are the weeds that are filling up the space if you want these, you know, seeds of love and compassion to flourish. Not that you can't work on all of it during your practice, but he's saying for most of us, we need to stop with creating more negative imprints first. Okay, but good, great questions. Yeah.
Yeah, these are some good ones. Will also asks, I know that our perceptions are correlated by karma, but what keeps coming into my head is, then what is our personality? Built up karma or experiences or all of it?
Yeah, well, I mean, it depends on what you mean by personality. I think what we call personality in the West, Buddha would say, are just certain karmic, habitual karmic seeds, just bad karmic habits that we've developed. I mean, we definitely know people who are kinder than others and people who are angrier than others. And that is just the result of having developed the habit of creating anger very, very well. I've really practiced and meditated on how to be anger so that we create those seeds over and over again. But again, it's all the result of karma, and none of the Buddhist point of view is none of that's permanent, okay? What we label as personality in this lifetime, that's just all temporary phenomena that at some point ceases to exist, okay?
And you may have answered, but Will's follow-up was, what makes us? Or me.
And the Buddha's answer would be, are you sure there is a us or me? There's body and mind. This is the question to answer. Look, see, can you find a me? Can you find an I? That's one of the most important meditations in the module on emptiness, looking for that I. Does it really exist, or is it just something we've imagined? That it exists, and we spend our entire lives serving it, basically. Yeah, good
question. Well, it's interesting, Robbie, because I was looking back at last year's homework that was assigned for this class, and the topic for analysis that you assigned was, what is personality? Can I find it? Can I find it anywhere in my mind or consciousness?
Yeah, okay. We may use that later in this module, yeah, okay.
And then John Kelly had a comment. He says, I don't remember the first 4 years of my life, but I presume I had thoughts then too that preceded my first recollections at five through today. Mm-hmm. In my internalization, it is simply an extension of that. Mm-hmm.
Exactly, yeah. That's one way we're instructed to think about this. Just because we remember something, or that's not my experience. That's a pretty poor argument that it doesn't exist, okay? And that's a prejudice we have, and we love to say, well, that's I don't remember that, or that's not my experience. But that doesn't really prove a lot, because most of us can't remember what we had for breakfast today, even though we know it existed. Okay.
Exactly. Speaking of breakfast, Julie Lewis shared that Geshla told me we were made out of banana bread.
tell him you're made out of kale bread. Geshla has a thing about kale, yeah. Okay, let's wind it up here. Thank you, everyone.
I think if you have time for one more, I just saw that we have one more on YouTube. Okay. Someone wrote in, what are criteria of what are criteria of cleanness of lenses? So I guess having clean lenses through which we perceive everything in the context of conceptions or labels that a mind puts on everything.
Yeah.
Any conception will be a mistaken one.
Most of them are. Okay. This gets into the whole area of direct perception, I'm going to put that off to the module on mind and mental factors. That's talked about more there, and it's fairly complicated. It's a good question. I'm saying just set that aside for right now. But the point is, our conceptions are not accurate. Most of the time, they're not. They are inaccurate. Okay. That's from a lack of wisdom. And it's through developing wisdom that we see things as they truly are. Okay, but certainly we're born with defective senses also. You know, just because we have them doesn't mean they're perfect. You know, and again, that's the result of our karma also, like everything else. Okay, so this week, meditate for 6 days. Do the opening prayers. Do a couple minutes of concentration meditation. And I'd really like you to do an analytic meditation on awareness. What does that mean when I say I am aware, or I am taking on an object, or I am engaging with an object? What is actually happening in my mind when that happens, when I become aware of something? So I'd like you to do a little bit of analytic meditation on that. And then we will meet next week, and we can do a brief dedication, acknowledge that we've come together through the magic of technology, and so we can discuss what the Buddha taught 2,500 years ago, and we can rejoice in that we've had the freedom to do this. And may the positive imprints that we've created ripen in the future in a way that benefits all sentient beings. Okay. So thank you very much, everyone.
Great
question.
Abby,
I appreciate it. Keep meditating. Oh, and Linda, can you say something about what's happening tomorrow night? Are you familiar with that?
I'm not familiar.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
If you look on Kadampa Center's webpage, there is a practice.
COVID. So the pandemic practice across the United States, there's going to be a memorial practice that is done on a personal level. So whether it's churches, whether it's the spiritual, whether it's just anybody that feels the need, there's going to be a nationwide COVID memorial for those who have lost their lives to COVID and also for their families. So tomorrow night at, I want to say 5:30, let me check. Yes, 5:30 tomorrow night on Zoom and streaming, Geshe Gelick is going to say a few prayers. So if we all come and have a candle, the candle is symbolic to what we're doing, and have a candle and let's do a few prayers together as a memorial for all of those who have lost their lives with COVID. National awareness on this.
Great.
There's information on the website, and you can register on the website for Zoom.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Sandy, for explaining that.
Yeah, and link, John's posted the link. And then, let's see, Kelly's asked, are the prayers, are they
Yes, I was going to say, I will post the prayers on the website in the Discovering Buddhism information under Mind and Its Potential. So right now what's posted there is the information sheet, homework, and then I'll post the prayers as well. So those will be there shortly after class ends.
Okay, great. Thank you, everyone.